Hello everyone and welcome to the 11th Square Circle Gazette Radio. I am Liam O'Rourke alongside G. John Chase.
Yow!
And you may notice this is a little bit of a change of pace for our show. We don't have the four-man round table like we usually do. No wacky intro this time. And it's because we're doing a completely different show, a completely different topic. Typically we do a very universal theme. Not so much this time. We're going to be talking about New Japan Pro Wrestling and the G1 Climax, which just wrapped up last Sunday night. Again, this is something that we've been wanting to talk about for a while,
Oh, absolutely.
As big New Japan fans.
Liam, are you ready to go to the land of the rising sun?
Ah, yes, I am. Oh, I believe I am.
Fantastic.
Just to segue back to the highs and lows of TNA podcast I did a couple of weeks ago,
Yep. G,
you mentioned that New Japan Pro Wrestling is the company to go to for disenfranchised wrestling fans. New Japan's
absolutely
the place to be?
Yes, absolutely. For anyone that listened to the TNA podcast a couple of weeks ago, I stated quite clearly that TNA isn't actually the second biggest wrestling company in the world. That is actually New Japan. And that more people actually need to support New Japan and watch it. So this podcast today is kind of a mixture of two halves, really. So this podcast is for people who watch the product and will comment on, obviously, the G1 Climax and so on. But it's also for people who aren't familiar with New Japan or the product, as we will kind of, like, guide you.
Absolutely, we'll lead you by the hand. G. John Chase is going to give his top 10 matches of the G1 Climax a little later on in the show.
Absolutely, yep.
We've got a hell of a lot of feedback to get to for your thoughts on the G1 Climax and the state of New Japan Pro Wrestling in general. But again, this is an introductory piece. There's a lot of different guys that you may not know, but there are some guys that you will know. I know that, G, this is something you kind of want to touch on a little bit when it comes to people kind of finding their way when it comes to the New Japan product.
Yeah, I think when anyone starts to watch a new promotion, they always try and find and look for the familiar. That's always the thing. I remember when I first started watching ECW, and I was looking at the back of the VHS tapes. I was always looking for names that were familiar to me, you know, like Taz and Dudley Boys and Awesome and so on. And New Japan is actually no different. You'll actually find for anyone that's not familiar with the New Japan product or Japanese wrestling in any way, shape, or form, will find names that they recognize. I mean, this tournament alone, you know, you're looking at names like AJ Styles, Luke Gallows, Davey Boy Smith Jr.
Shelton Benjamin,
yes. Well, who else have we got?
Lance Archer's another one people might be familiar with.
Lance Archer, everyone familiar with.
There is a bit of a barrier when it comes to Japanese wrestling for people of our ilk who are used to the WWE, and they think that that's wrestling. You know, that kind of thing with the promos and the emphasis on the entertainment aspect of things. That's wrestling to them. So there's a little bit of a barrier when it comes to... It's very much a very sports-based presentation in Japan in terms of, you know... And the G1 Climax, you know, the league table, basically for those of you who don't know what the G1 Climax is, it's two blocks of wrestlers. This year it was 11 wrestlers per block. 2 points for a win. Everybody wrestles everybody in a round-robin tournament, and the two block winners face in the final. And the effect that this kind of tournament has is just... following different people, you know, the chase to lead the group and who's going to win, and there's so much drama and tension on the last day, and it works perfectly in New Japan.
Oh, I mean, when you look at the very brief history of the G1 Climax, I mean, when it first started, there weren't that many participants. I think they probably had about almost four people per bracket at a time, and so now it's increased to now 11 apiece. This is the largest G1 Climax they've ever done, to the point where this is now this whole Climax tournament is now over the course of 12 nights, taking part over three weeks. Now.
Yeah,
3 weeks. This is a three week long,
Odyssey
WrestleFest, WrestleMania, if you like to think of it like that.
And I will say that it is a good thing that they went over 3 weeks, just to transition into the G1 Climax a little bit here. Last year's G1, they did a lot of shows in very close proximity, and the injuries are really starting to pile up. Japanese wrestling is a very, very physical style. Hiroki Goto broke his jaw, Hiroyoshi Tenzan didn't get to finish the tournament either. Everybody made it through this year.
Yeah, I mean, we did have one little scary moment with one of the wrestlers, Ishii, injured himself quite badly,
but he managed to continue. Broke his jaw as well, actually. Yeah, kudos to him, because and some of the matches that we saw, incredible, and extremely physical as well. So
yeah, and we will go more into particularly what happened to Ishii as well, because when we go into, for people who haven't seen the matches yet, what happened to Ishii and what he continued to do afterwards, it's actually borderline amazing.
Okay, so just from, you know, again, a bit of a jaw purpose here, the New Japan fans, we're going to get to the meat and potatoes, so to speak, very, very shortly, the G1, but just again, as a final point to the kind of casual fan who might not be super familiar with New Japan, if there was one guy that you would like to say, hey, to you, John Q. Walmart, if you don't watch New Japan, watch some of this guy, and you'll get a good idea of what New Japan brings to the table in a positive way. Who would you suggest?
Oh, that's a very good one, actually, because I'm actually going to say Okada.
Yeah, the man whose music you heard at the top of the show.
Yeah, I'm going to say Okada, because he's pretty much the all-rounder. He has the charisma, he's got a great gimmick, a great moveset, which kind of varies between, you know, the kind of flashy and also the very kind of hard-hitting. I think also the fact that, out of some interest, WWE were interested in him at one point as well.
And actually, Okada's a good one to suggest, because he is actually one of the more Americanized kind of characters.
He's probably the most modern act that New Japan have in terms of having a range of experience. I mean, for anyone that doesn't know Okada, Okada did actually have a brief stint in TNA.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great reaction, because that's exactly what it was. Okada actually went around the world as well. He didn't just do TNA. He wrestled in a lot of different places, did a lot of different styles, and you can actually see that in his wrestling style.
Yeah. I think I would personally suggest Shinsuke Nakamura, just because not only is he my personal favourite wrestler in New Japan, but I think charisma for days, and he has so many good matches with so many different guys. I just love what he brings to the table, so I'll suggest him. Moving on to the G1 Climax this year, Dave Meltzer made the very bold statement that he believed this was the best tournament in the history of the wrestling business.
I think he's absolutely right.
Yeah?
Yeah, I really do. This year has exceeded all expectations. I mean, last year everyone was saying that the 2013 G1 Climax was the greatest tournament of all time.
Well, this is where I'm kind of seeing a little bit of, not necessarily contradiction, but it's a contrary opinion to what Meltzer said, because some people believe that this year's was the best one, but last year's was pretty phenomenal. And there have been great G1s in the past. The 96 G1, which was Vicky Choshu's last, as he said at the time, was an extremely dramatic G1 and is one of my personal favourites, but last year's and this year's have really just kind of stepped up.
Yeah, I mean, last year, when you look at 2013, there were so many great matches.
Yeah.
Just to name a few, off the top of my head, Tanahashi Ishii was a great match, Nakamura Ibushi,
And
probably the best match of the tournament, which was Shibata Ishii.
I actually thought Tanahashi and Ishii was a better match.
Really?
Yeah.
Was that because of the Steiner screwdriver?
No. I just think it was a better story. The hard-hitting Ishii-Shibata match, I mean, that was a fantastic match.
Yeah.
And if you love that style of just beating the fuck out of
each other.
I thought Tanahashi and Ishii told a better story, to be perfectly
honest. Yeah, Tanahashi Ishii did tell a better story in the fact that, you know, Ishii was absolutely the underdog on this occasion. Tanahashi being like almost the John Cena of that company, being the big name, and Ishii just being the small dog there. But personally for me, the Ishii Shibata as like a real showcase for like Japanese wrestling, saying this is what Japanese wrestling's like, and just how hard hitting it is.
But when we had our WrestleMania party this year, we put that on so that everybody could get a little bit of a taste of what's going on in Japan right now.
Yeah.
Just seeing the reactions was quite
humorous. I showed a colleague at work of mine who's he's got like a fifth dan in karate and so on, he's all into like, you know, actual, you know, fighting, so to say.
He's one of them.
He's one of those guys. And obviously just kind of, you know, just deems wrestling as fake. I actually showed him the Ishii Shibata match and he actually enjoyed watching it, because he could actually tell that there was a certain degree of contact in that in that match, and that it just it was able to suspend your what's the phrase?
There you go.
Suspend your belief. Yeah, you know, it's just, it makes you forget that everything's fake.
Well, that's the thing, and that's one of the things. Because the thing with the WWE lately is there's a lot of, like I said, we've mentioned before, there's a lot of disenfranchised wrestling fans that don't like the WWE's, you know, too hokey, and they kind of, you know, there was a massive in 2006. There was a massive kind of shift in what the audience wanted, and the UFC took off as that sporting presentation and a more serious version of professional wrestling. And I think that's actually why New Japan is actually kind of getting a lot of attention, is because people kind of want that. I think people want a more serious, you know, WWE fans. I think that, you know, the American wrestling fan, and I guess I'm lumping in British fans as part of that, want a bit of a more serious product. They want less comedy. Yeah. They want to be able to take what they're seeing seriously.
Yes, they don't want the company to take themselves seriously.
Yeah.
And that's what you feel like WWE doesn't do half the time. It's just like always like playing a joke on itself, which is absolutely ridiculous.
It's like they're unhappy in their own skin.
Exactly.
So they have to try and be something that they're not. Whereas New Japan, pro wrestling, is completely unapologetic. And I think that's why a lot of people kind of gravitate into it, and being you included.
The ring announcers, we don't understand a word of what they're saying. Yeah, the commentator, sorry. Yeah, we don't understand a word of what they're saying. But the one guy who's pretty much the JR, he is just screaming constantly.
He's so good.
And he just makes the matches half the time, because he's just screaming. And we don't know what he's screaming about, but we know and we understand he's excited at what we're seeing.
Well, that's the thing. I think that's actually something where it's kind of a telling thing with how much they go, that, you know, Michael Cole and those guys in the WWE are very micromanaged in terms of what they're saying. Yeah. The emotion has been lacking in commentary for years in the WWE.
It's as if they're just sat back.
Yeah, in Japan, we don't even know what they're saying, but that energy translates.
Yeah, yeah.
And it really helps the matches. And I can understand, because I've actually spoken to people around the area that we live in who have outright said that they can't really get into Japanese wrestling because of the commentary. They need that narrative.
I can understand that if they're primarily just watch wrestling, as in they only watch it on TV. Yeah. But I don't understand that as a criticism if you also go and see live shows, because you don't have commentary when you go and see WWE when they come to the UK. So it's just like, you just got to take yourself out of it. It's just concentrate on the story. It's almost like the story that they're telling you, not what the commentators are telling you. The commentators will yell and shout and make things sound like exciting, but just watch what the wrestlers are doing themselves, because the story's right there.
Yeah.
You don't need someone to hold your hand and mummy cuddle you and tell you what's going on, because that's the difference with New Japan. The story's absolutely obvious for you to see.
Yeah. Just the shift to the G1 climax a little bit more. We kind of went off on the beaten path there.
Yeah.
But still, we got so much feedback that I want to get to. There were three questions that we posed to you guys on various message boards. We asked who you thought the star of the G1 climax was this year, what you thought your favourite match was, or what you thought the best match of the G1 was this year, and the direction that New Japan's going to take between now and Wrestle Kingdom on January the 4th, which is their big show of the year at the Tokyo Dome. Before we get into the feedback, what are your thoughts on this? Kazuchika Okada won the G1 climax this year. He has the title match for the IWGP World Championship on January 4th against who? We don't know for sure yet. It's currently AJ Styles. How do you see things playing out yourself?
Into the future?
Yeah.
Well, first off, obviously, I'm absolutely ecstatic that Okada won the G1 climax, because, I mean, he
surprised me a little bit, to be honest.
He's my guys, but I don't know, when we got to, because the final was really interesting, because the final was between Nakamura and Okada, which is both of our guys.
Which is actually funny, it's a shame we didn't watch it together at the same time.
Yeah, you know? I know, it's just this weird, but, like, I mean, I felt quietly confident that Okada was going to win, just because it seemed to make more sense. It seemed to make more sense to have Okada chasing the belt and someone else for him to win it off at Tokyo Dome.
Well, having said that, though, neither me nor you thought that he'd be in the finals.
No, I think it's because, you know, New Japan sometimes like to throw a curveball. I mean, like, in 2013, you thought Nakamura was going to win.
Yeah, I bet the farm on Nakamura.
Yeah, you
year.
Bet the farm on him.
And this year, too, so I've been over two on
Pro. Oh, yeah, exactly, yeah.
G1.
I think last time I picked Goto, though, I wanted Naito to win.
Yeah.
Which he did. But, yeah, on this occasion, I thought the right person won. Personally, I think, like, as you probably predicted yourself when we were watching the G1 climax, I think it's probably going to end up being Nakamura Okada again.
Yeah.
I think that was a teaser. I think the finale was a teaser. And that they if that's all they've got, then why would they only do one match? That's going to happen.
I was
when Tanahashi and Okada have six matches in the process of 3 years, they're not going to do Nakamura Okada once. I think that was like a little tester, and they're going to do it again where Nakamura wins the title and he's defending it against Okada.
Yeah, I was a little bit thrown by the fact they did that in the finals and had that match with 2 days build.
I can understand why it would be confusing with just a 2 day build,
because
but at the same
honestly,
time,
I
absolutely understand
so
why.
Long.
I absolutely understand why they did it, because this tournament was different to what they've done before, because the final day of the tournament was now being hosted in the Cebu Dome, right?
35,000 seat building, which they didn't sell out by any stretch.
No, but it's a baseball like stadium, isn't it, or something like that. So yeah, so I can understand why they put that match on, because they wanted to put a marquee match, and simply doing something like, say, Tanahashi Okada 7, whilst most likely would have been a great match because of the history those two have had, I think they wanted to do something new. I think they want, because at the moment they only have the one super show, they only have the one WrestleMania, so to say, which is the Tokyo Dome show.
Yeah.
And I think they want to make the G1 climax an alternative or a secondary super show. And so I think they were using that Okada Nakamura match just to emphasize the fact that G1 is now a major card of the year.
Yeah. So you're thinking that and to that point that they're going to, you know, revisit this on January 4th.
Absolutely, yeah. I think that's the obvious way. I think that's going to be the way. The only other way is if Styles holds it, if Styles retains it till Wrestle Kingdom and he loses it to Okada then. My general assumption with the Tokyo Dome show is that might be the end of the Bullet Club.
Well, I just play devil's advocate, because you mentioned the Bullet Club there. we saw the angle at the Cebu Dome, the G1 finals, that, you know, Jeff Jarrett and Scott D'Amore joining the Bullet Club. Yep. We can get to the Bullet Club later. But Tanahashi is very much linked to the Bullet Club now. Do you see, as a bit of a curveball, Tanahashi being the guy to beat Styles for the belt?
He's
now linked with them.
Yeah, I have considered that. I've considered that, you know, Tanahashi might be the guy that beats AJ Styles, but, like, I really don't know if they would dare do another Tanahashi Okada.
Yeah, it's overkill.
Again, I don't want to make this sound like this is a bad thing. They won't have a bad match. I think it's almost impossible for those two to have a bad match. But it's just to do it the seventh time.
Yeah, in three years. They've done it too many times.
Yeah, it's too many times. So I don't know. I actually think what will probably more likely happen is Tanahashi will either go and try and win the Intercontinental title from Fat Fuck Fail. Right, which is a little in joke for us.
Or Bad Luck Farley.
Although
it does look like Bad Luck Fail, for those who don't know.
Yeah, maybe Tanahashi's going to face him and maybe win the IC title. Or the alternative, what I thought is going to happen, is if they stick with Nakamura Okada, I predict that they might go Ishii against Farley
for the IC title. Yeah, that was my gut instinct.
And then what they might do is a speciality match where it's Tanahashi and a partner of his choice, I'd say Naito, against Styles and Jarrett. That's probably why...
At the Dome.
So it'll be Tanahashi against Styles, who obviously, you know, beat him up, and Jarrett for turning on him. So that's how I see it. With nothing on the line, no title at all, because Nakamura and Okada are wrestling for the IWGP title.
Okay, fair enough. Again, just to re-stress, the three questions that we asked you guys, you know, the star of the G1, the best match of the G1, and the future direction between now and Wrestle Kingdom. We're going to get into this now. Pirate Monkey from Wrestling Forum, number one, the star of the G1 for him was Katsuyori Shibata. The guy looked really strong in the tournament and won me over. Shinsuke is still my favourite, but Shibata has now got me interested in his future matches. Shibata, for those of you who have not seen this guy before, listed as simply The Wrestler as his nickname.
Yeah.
That MMA influenced style. Just
yeah. He's the epitome. His gimmick is the epitome of bare bones.
Yeah.
He's absolute bare bones. He's just wears, he's almost got the Austin effect. He just wears black trunks, black knee pads, and black kick pads. And that's it. He just strolls to the ring, kicks ass, and then walks off. That's what he does.
In terms of being the star of the G1, he had some pretty stellar matches, including my personal favourite, the G1, which we can get into later on.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But he had a really good showing this year.
I think he did, yeah. He definitely had an improvement on last year. Last year, he was kind of like, almost like a forgotten thought.
Well, last year, and this is the one thing that I do want to get into at this point before we really start breaking into the feedback, I do like the fact that they booked this year's G1 a lot differently to last year.
Yeah.
Last year at the G1, they had all, pretty much everybody in contention on the final show.
Yeah.
So basically, everybody who had a chance to win would lose on the final show.
Yeah, yeah.
And then one guy makes it through. It kind of made it a little bit more interesting in terms of there's five guys that could, you know, win.
Yeah.
And we don't know who it's going to be. But at the same time, I hated that 50-50 booking all the way through the tournament last year, where you know, Satoshi Kojima's beating Hiroshi Tanahashi on day one, and you know, a lot of the top guys are not doing so well. Okada losing to Togi Makabe, which I'm sure, you know, really lit a fire under your ass.
Yeah.
I know it did.
That had to be a lot of kind of, let's say, almost dodgy results in order to create that scenario where everyone was on equal points.
Which I didn't like. This year
is a lot more natural. It's a lot more natural who wins what matches, and like at various points there were different leaders. I mean, the top four guys at the end of the tournament weren't the top four guys midway through.
Yeah,
but I mean, we had different points. I mean, at the very beginning, for the first like 4 days, Shelton Benjamin was in front.
Yeah,
Shelton Benjamin was the only one who won all his matches.
Won four straight matches.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, Shibata was also in that category as well. Shibata was winning all of his matches as well, and he was quite high up the ratings as well. Shibata himself, I mean, like, yeah, I thought it was definitely an improvement on last year in terms of his general performance. And, yeah, I mean, like, when I go over a list of, you know, matches that were great this year, his name is mentioned more than a couple of times.
I really think that he's somebody that they need to elevate and quick.
Absolutely. When it comes to the Tokyo Dome, they need to do something with him. He even needs to be in a high-profile match with someone from another company, because sometimes they do that in New Japan. Sometimes they get someone like from Noah or All Japan in. He either needs to have a high profile match, or he needs to be wrestling for the IC title or the tag team belts. I wouldn't mind if him and Goto teamed up to take on Gallows and Anderson to take those tag titles away from him.
I think he's better than that.
I think he's better than that, but at the same time,
nothing against Goto or the tag belts.
Not at all. But it's just like, the only thing with Shibata, I'm a huge Shibata fan, and to the gentleman who wrote in. The funny thing is with this tournament, right, everyone's going to mention a name, okay? Everyone's going to mention a name of who they thought was the number one guy in the tournament, and you know what? You're right. every single one of you is right. that's the weird thing about this tournament. Everyone was superb.
Yeah, that really is why this tournament's being lauded as well as it is, because there are so many great individual performances, so many great matches.
Yeah.
And we'll break it down now. Pirate Monkey, again, to go back to him, his favourite match of the tournament was the final between Shinsuke Nakamura and Kazuchika Okada. I wish somebody else would have made it into the finals instead. I was personally rooting for AJ versus Shibata, but Shinsuke and Okada put on a great match. I also really enjoyed Tanahashi versus AJ Styles.
Yeah,
that was a great match. The final I absolutely loved, and not just because I was shitting bricks because I was hoping Nakamura would win, but you know, certain things like the counter of the Rainmaker into the flying armbar
were
outstanding. Yeah. The bomber out of nowhere.
I mean, I'm actually going to reserve my review of that match a little bit later, because I want to make a certain point about Okada and what he was like in that match later on in the podcast.
Okay. And in terms of future direction, he says, looks like New Japan is going to continue to build Shibata into their next star. I think he needs to ease off on the stiffness a little. I know Shibata's appeal is his shoot fighting style, but the guy needs to ease off a little before he hurts someone. Plus, he needs to add a little more depth to his moveset, as I feel he will eventually lose his appeal once he starts working more matches. Just on the stiffness front, that go to sleep on Goto at the Seibu Dome was fucking deadly. Also, he says, looks like the Bullet Club is going to feud with Tanahashi. Not sure if it's going to mainly focus on Tanahashi and AJ, or Tanahashi and Jeff Jarrett. I'm also predicting that somewhere down the line, Jarrett and Styles are going to feud, and we're going to have a civil war with Bullet Club, which ends with them splitting into two separate groups. So just firmly cemented
most this likely,
complete NWO rip-off, then.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they'll probably do that just because, obviously, for anyone who's been living under a rock, Jarrett's planning on opening a new promotion called GFW. So I'd probably assume if they're going to do that split, it's probably because one of them's going to go back to GFW whilst the other stays in New Japan. That will be my assumption if they do want to do that. He made a comment, and I'm actually glad he made it, because this is like a problem I have with Shibata. Was he was saying that he needs to adapt his moveset,
right?
And I think he's absolutely right. And in the opposite way, I think he's actually wrong with that. He needs to actually loosen up on the stiff shots. The issue with him is his moveset is punches, chops, elbows, kicks, stomps, drop kicks. It's mainly strikes, and then he adds a few other ones like the go to sleep, sleep hold. And the main problem I have noticed with Shibata is if Shibata is facing someone who, let's just say, is a little bit soft, right? They don't want to do that stiff style with him. Then Shibata's matches are okay. They're no more better than that. Like, I mean, in this tournament, that, you know, he had certain matches with, you know, like Gallows and D.H. Smith, which were okay, because they didn't want to go with that stiff style, because they themselves have a very American style. But when he actually wrestles people who are willing to go the distance with him, allow him to use those stiff shots,
beat the fuck out of him.
Yeah, exactly. Like Ishii, Honma, Nagata, Kojima,
Goto,
all those people, then he excels and he's fantastic. That's the only reason why I might think that he might never get to that top period, just because I don't think his style at the moment is consistent enough for him to be the top guy, unless they protected him.
I don't think he should be the top guy. Yeah. I think that's. I think he's got a place at the top, but as the one guy.
Especially
not with the three guys they got right now.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think that's why he's always going to be held within a certain level, is because he isn't always guaranteed to have a great match. That's the issue with him. And so there's a little bit of weakness there.
I do want to go off on the Bullet Club, because I fucking hate the Bullet Club. I've been wanting to get this off my chest for a while.
It's the one really bad thing about
I know that we start this podcast saying that, you should like this, wrestling fans, because it's got everything you like. Having said that, New Japan's booking, I don't want to be the complainer, but it's been a little bit shaky this year. It's not foolproof. It's never perfect. Nothing's perfect.
Yeah.
But the Gracies earlier in the year was a big misfire. The focus on the Bullet Club, I'm not a big fan of at all. I hate the Bullet Club. I think
do you know why? I'll exactly pinpoint why the Bullet Club hasn't been working. We should just say
I've got plenty of reasons.
Everything else New Japan's pretty much doing is as great as it has been for the last few years. The Bullet Club is the one thing that sticks out, and the reason why is because it reeks of WWE. That's what it is. It just has that WWE style to it, and that doesn't fit in with New Japan, and that's why the Bullet Club doesn't work. Is because it's pretty much there's only one Japanese guy in that group; the rest are all American, and it just doesn't fit in. And I don't know. I can't really gauge with the crowd whether they're actually accepting this or not.
I think they can accept the individual guys. It was a massive boon for AJ Styles to have this G1 climax where the Bullet Club really wasn't involved in any of his matches at all, and he just got to shine on his own.
Yeah,
it did more for him to be on his own to the Japanese audience than it was being in the Bullet Club. The reason I fucking hate the Bullet Club is just the act in general sucks. The biggest fans of the Bullet Club, I'm convinced, are people who don't watch New Japan.
Yeah.
Because if you did, you would know that these fucking guys crotch chopping and talking about Too Sweet and For Life.
Oh, yeah.
Like the biggest backyard marks in the world. Oh, yeah. It's like, it's cringeworthy.
They do all the DX crotch chopping. They do the, the NWO Wolfpack symbol with their hands. And yeah, it's a big rip-off.
Escape Illusion from Wrestling Forum for the star of the tournament mentions AJ Styles. This tournament has really rejuvenated his career after all the damage that TNA did. Just the fact that he could hang with the New Japan guys and in most cases outperform them was surprising, since I thought he was done. AJ did have an awesome tournament.
As I mentioned before with last year, how Ishii and Ibushi got elevated through the use of the G1 Climax. This year, for me, there were two guys, and one of them was AJ Styles, who really shone in this tournament. And I think he helped open the eyes of a lot of the New Japan fans who weren't familiar with AJ Styles' work. They suddenly saw a guy who was like, oh, okay, we can understand. We're starting to understand now why this guy's champion. I mean, for starters, he wasn't in the strongest of the two blocks. He was in Block B, so there were less big names in here. But when he did wrestle, I mean, Jesus Christ. Yeah. I mean, like, he did wrestle Okada on the first night and had an absolute barnstorming match. Absolute barnstorming match. You know, he went on to face Naito. There was the Suzuki match.
Well, we're going to get to that now, because Escape Delusion for his match of the tournament says tied between Okada and Nakamura, and AJ Styles versus Minoru Suzuki are rated both 5 stars for different reasons. Both are must-see matches this year. The Suzuki Stars match was just a fantastic match. I love Suzuki's star. Minoru Suzuki,
yeah,
he's not for everyone, but he really should be.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this was probably Styles' best match on the tournament. How to describe this to you, how good this match was. I think after we watched it, I pointed out to you that this match was fantastic for the fact that there was actually no near falls. That's like a key thing for this, right? In an era where near falls is like constantly
good
used.
Match.
Yeah, if you have near falls, that's how you have a good match, and that's how you work the audience, right? This had none, and so the rest of the drama was just built up through Suzuki working over AJ Styles' limbs.
Yeah, well, Suzuki's known for that. He had a match with Hiroshi Tanahashi, I think King of Pro Wrestling 2012, which was much the same. No pin attempts the entire match until the finish.
Yeah, Suzuki's got that very classic shoot-style wrestling kind of gimmick. He's also kind of quite quirky as well, quite nuts, interesting look, always sticking out his tongue, and just comes across as a badass. And for me with Suzuki was a very interesting one this year, because for the last 2 years,
yeah, he hasn't been booked great.
Yes, last 2 years Suzuki's been treated like shit, okay, in terms of the undercard, because it's kind of like one of the few weaknesses New Japan have is like the top of the card and the middle of the card are booked brilliantly. The lower card, they just phone it in sometimes.
Yeah, there's a lot of repetition, and Suzuki's been a big victim of that. Yeah, this never-ending feud with Toru Yano.
To the point where I actually forgot how good Suzuki is, because sometimes we don't, well, particularly when it's Yano involved, he has this match with AJ Styles on day 7.
Yeah.
And and that's when he starts facing all the top guys. You know, he faces Naito, he faces Goto, he faces Okada as well.
Yeah, Okada on the last day was a another awesome match.
We will get to that one shortly. That's another fantastic match. But it all started with that style Suzuki, and then suddenly I just remember watching this going, oh shit, I forgot how good Suzuki is.
Yeah, he's brilliant.
And he had an absolutely fantastic second half of the tournament.
Just to finish Escape Delusion's point, he said, in terms of the direction of the future, I have no clue, but it looks like Okada will finally prove he's no longer the young boy and get his revenge on AJ Styles. That, or AJ may drop the title to Tanahashi at King of Pro Wrestling, and Okada will beat Tanahashi and be the number one guy after that. So many possibilities right now, I'm not sure what will happen. Again, to go back to what I said earlier on. Innovator from TPWW forums. Star of the tournament, AJ Styles. He had tremendous matches throughout the tournament and definitely rose his stock in the company. But also Tomohiro Ishii. Come on, he had two matches of the days after separating his shoulder.
There we go. Okay, it's Ishii time. Right, Ishii.
I love Ishii.
Ishii, yeah. We're a big
reminds
fan of it.
Reminds me of my dog.
Yeah, we're both huge fans of Ishii's. We started loving him about a couple of years ago when we started realising, shit, this guy's having awesome matches
this
all the time.
This guy's consistent undercard greatness.
Yeah, but he's a fucking badass.
Yeah, he's a tough
shot. I mean, he's a badass. And for me, he had the best match of the tournament last year when he wrestled Shibata. Okay, he had the best match
of
the tournament.
And even if I disagree on the match, I still agree that it's Ishii and Tanahashi is the best match of the tournament for me. Still Ishii.
Yeah, it's still Ishii. Yeah, he was absolutely fantastic. And as I said, him and Ibushi were the two standouts of that tournament. Their careers were elevated through the G1 climax. And in this year, he actually did better than he did last year. He actually finished off on more points, finished off higher in the table. And, you know, he had great matches against, you know, like Tanahashi, Nakamura, Honma. A rematch for Shibata, which was even better than the first.
I don't think it was better than the first.
You don't think it was better than the first?
No,
I think it's because of the beginning. The beginning wasn't as hot as the first one.
The crowd wasn't as hot. They had the separated shoulder. It wasn't close.
I'll respectfully disagree. I watched both matches back to back today. Back on day 8, okay, Ishii wrestled Davey Boy Smith Jr. And in the process of this match, he did a Hurricanrana on Smith. And landed awkwardly on his left shoulder, dislocating it, right? Now, most people would just instantly finish the match. They'll just go for a quick roll-up and finish it. You know, that's what Randy Orton would do. Randy Orton would roll him up, run to the back, cry, and then have a month off. Okay? Because he's a pussy. Right? All right, let's just be honest. Ishii is not a pussy. Proceeds to continue with the finish, which is a brainbuster.
He brainbusted the massive Davey Boy Smith Jr.
Four things to pick out here. One, he finishes the matches as planned. Secondly, as you said, Ishii's not very big, and Davey Boy Smith is a big guy. He's about, what, 6'3", 6'4"? He's huge, right? He then proceeds to pick him up in a brainbuster. Point three, the arm that is cradling Davey Boy Smith's head.
And supporting his whole body.
And supporting the whole weight is the injured arm, the dislocated arm, okay? And then on top of that, the move wasn't sloppy. It was perfectly executed. Yeah. And I just remember watching this being astounded because at first we didn't realise something had happened.
Yeah.
It was only after the match when he was laying on the floor in pain and they had to hold his arm up as they walked into the back, we realised something bad had happened.
Yeah.
We couldn't tell. He dislocated his shoulder.
I will say that it did unfortunately...
Badass.
Yeah, absolutely
fucking badass.
It did unfortunately show at the Sabu Dome show where he tried to superplex Carl Anderson and almost fucking killed him.
I mean, yeah, this is another thing, right? Then has one day off and then gets right back to wrestling.
He had a very good match against Shibata, and he had what I thought was a great match against Yuji Nagata on the final day.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, if anything, like, fair play to him. Like, you know, it mustn't have been easy to work with an arm that's injured like that. But it kind of added something to his matches towards the end because it was just that obvious thing. They couldn't hide away from it. It was obvious that his arm was legitimately hurt, and he couldn't work the matches absolutely effectively. So, like, they started becoming more about his forearms and clotheslines as opposed to all his suplexes. As stated when you said with the Anderson match where he tried to do a top rope superplex and basically they just fell off and just dropped and almost sliced Anderson in half on the ropes.
Son of a bitch, although I will say that he shouldn't have been wrestling on that fight, on that Sabu Dome show.
No, he shouldn't. He should have been rested. But but I don't know whether that was a booking decision where they kind of almost forced him to do it, or whether Ishii's just that tough and that much of a trooper, he turned around and said, no, I'll finish this off.
He's tough as nails, but it's not wise.
Tough as SOB.
Innovator also mentioned for match of the tournament, Nakamura versus Ishii, Styles versus Suzuki, and Okada Nakamura, so it's a toss-up. But an honourable mention to Nagata and Ishii, which I just mentioned there.
Yep.
In terms of future direction, he says it kind of has to be all the top New Japan stars against the Bullet Club, right? I think they're going to save that for Tanahashi by the look of the last show.
I don't think Tanahashi's going to defeat all of the Bullet Club, so I think he's probably right. It's going to be like all Bullet Club are pretty much going to have almost all the belts, and it's going to be...
Well, they do now.
And it's going to be New Japan just listing off a crusade to get these belts back, and everyone will face someone in the Bullet Club, and that's why I think it'll be the end of the Bullet Club at Tokyo Dome. They'll all lose in some way, shape or form, and so New Japan wins and Bullet Club will disband.
Yeah, Matt Wright mentions star of the tournament for me was Tomoaki Honma. He had so many great matches, starting with a hot Tanahashi match and peaking with a Shibata Classic. Yep. And even though I get the underdog thing, he deserved a lot better than the big fat 0 points he got. We got to talk about Honma because Honma was a crown jewel.
Yeah, so I actually chose to do a top 10 of the top 10 performers at the tournament, and Honma's number one. And the reason why is because there was just this great story of Honma. As I said, he got 0 points. He didn't win a single match.
Which did suck.
Okay. Which did suck. He should have won one match. He should at least, because the pop would have been huge. When I've been emphasising about the fact that G1 can elevate a career, this is the perfect representation of that. Honma was just this lower card guy who got good crowd reactions. By the end of this tournament, he's a fucking star.
He was this year's Ishii.
Yeah, he was this year's Ishii, right? Again, for someone that's not familiar with Honma, to try and describe to you what he's like is quite tricky. He's got like this hardcore kind of sounding music. He has a badass look. He looks like he's a mean fucker, right? He looks in great shape. But he has this gimmick
This one spot.
This one spot, right, where he basically does a headbutt. Like, the opponent's on the ground, he just does a standing headbutt and just falls down. He always attempts a headbutt. And he usually misses. And this is the big gimmick, and it gets, like, a big laugh.
Yeah, to the point where his music video at the Cebu Dome was just him missing his headbutt again and again and again.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think they actually did a head count. So one website, I can't actually quote what the website is, unfortunately, but one website actually did a head count of how many times he did the headbutt. And out of the 38 attempts, he hit it 17 times, right? Which isn't the
less
best...
Less than 50%.
Yeah, not the best percentage ever, right? But this is the great thing. He does it in every match. And it never gets old. When he does a scoop slam, he smacks his head, bounces off the ropes, and we can't really describe to you how he hits his headbutt. It's not Benoit style, okay, or anything like that. He just kind of like puts his hands down his side, tilts his head to the left, and just falls onto the opponent. When he misses, it's hilarious. But when he hits it, huge pop.
Yeah, every time.
And that was the thing with Honma, is just that he kept working that style and he kept losing. And the more he lost, the more the crowd loved him. And this is this great thing, like, by the end, like, I think he should have won one match, at least, because if he won one match, the pop would have been ginormous.
Yeah, and I think in retrospect and hindsight, the match to win was the Shibata match.
Oh, absolutely.
But because after that, when you looked at the opponents he had for the rest of the tournament, it's like, none of these wins
really means
that much. Long, great matches where he comes so close to beating so many of these top stars, and he just came up a little bit short every time. But there were times when it looked like, okay, this is the one, this is the one. And the Shibata match, the reason I love that match so much is it was so clear that this is the one. They couldn't have scripted it differently. Yeah, differently, really. Considering they had their plan, they didn't probably know ahead of time that match was going to be so good, but man, that was the right one to go. Matt Wright for the match of the tournament says, Okada versus AJ Styles on the first night is my pick. There may have been better matches later in the tournament, but that's the first match that springs to mind for me, and the reversal into Okada's tombstone was awesome.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, oh yeah, that's the one where he's got him like almost like in an Alabama slam position, and then literally just spins him around onto the front of Okada's body so he could hit the tombstone, which was just fantastic. I didn't even know you could do that.
Yeah, Matt Wright mentions in terms of future direction, clearly they're going to run with this Bullet Club thing as long as they can, but I hope it's temporary. There's no reason why Shibata shouldn't be a main eventer, so I'd like a lot more focus on him by the time Wrestle Kingdom comes around. Echoing your sentiments there. Stuck in Hell for Life in Wrestling Forum. I thought Okada was the wrestler of the tournament. Styles, Ishii, Shibata, and Nakamura are also very close to that title. Okada gets a vote there.
Yep.
Match of the tournament for me was Okada versus Nakamura, but a match that I seem to be the only one praising is Nakamura versus Nagata, which I think is a 4.5-star affair and just incredible. That was a hell of a match, and actually it was really,
it
was really good in the sense that it actually seemed like they had like a real tension in the match, which was really good. Nakamura doing that thing where he kind of kicks his head a lot.
That's a great thing.
Bullying him a little bit.
That was actually a really great match, and funny enough, that match isn't actually in my top 10.
But that
tells you how good the tournament is. Yeah. Like, a great match like that doesn't even make it into my top 10. It's not because it's a bad match, it's a fantastic match, it's just there's so many of them.
Just to get on to his point about the direction, I see AJ dropping the belt to Nakamura somehow between now and the Dome to set up the inevitable rematch between the two Chaos members. It would be awesome if, in the match, the Bullet Club attacked Nakamura and Okada, saved him, so they can have that rematch. I'm really most interested in how the GFW affiliation will play out, because it could either be smooth and simple like the ROH one, or a total flop like the NWA one. I'm leaning towards it being a flop, since GFW still isn't set up and haven't announced anything. Tanahashi will get Shibata at the Dome. Takahashi will lose the NEVER Championship in September to, I don't know. It should be Honma, by the way. It's my own comment.
Definitely.
Farley will lose the IC belt at the October pay-per-view to Tanahashi. Styles will actually lose to Nakamura in November. The tag belts will also come off Gallows and Anderson at some point. By the time Wrestle Kingdom comes around, the Bullet Club will be no more. We can only hope. And one last huge prediction here. Ishii will finally have a match at Wrestle Kingdom.
Oh, of course, yeah. He always gets freaking dropped, doesn't he?
He does. ROH Fan 19 from Wrestling Forum mentions, in terms of star of the tournament, AJ Styles, with Honma and Ishii being close seconds. His match of the tournament was Okada Nakamura as well. And in terms of future direction, Nakamura takes the belt off AJ in October, and then we get Okada Nakamura at the Tokyo Dome. So,
yeah,
common opinion there.
Yeah, it seems to be like universal what they think they're going to do. And actually, from a point that was made earlier, where they were talking about, like, you know, they're not sure like how it's going to go. Is Tanahashi going to win the title? Nakamura's going to win the title? Is AJ going to retain the title? It doesn't matter. Because the interesting thing is, they were the four names that were in contention on the final day, right, to win the tournament. And those four names have gone past the tournament and now in contention for the main event of the Tokyo Dome. I mean, Okada's fixed in there pretty much almost. And now it's like, which one of those three are the possibilities?
Yeah.
So even though Okada's now almost fixed on that main event, the main event isn't set in stone yet. And it's not predictable yet. It still can be anybody. And that's the genius thing about it. And I think when I was trying to think about like how the main event's going to go down, I don't think Tanahashi's the right way to go. The only thing with Nakamura winning the title, I don't actually know if that's best for Nakamura. Because I'm going to go on the assumption that Okada's going to win at Tokyo Dome. Because if he loses, that's another G1 Climax winner that hasn't won the
three belt. Three in a row.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. And I can't see New Japan making that mistake. So Okada's going to win. So then I'm kind of wondering if it actually benefits Nakamura, who hasn't won the title for quite a long time.
Nah, he hasn't been the top guy for a while.
To win the belt, let's say he's the next challenger, right? And he wins the belt then. He, at best, he's only going to have the belt for 4 months.
Yeah.
Before he loses it back. Now, in New Japan, you know, not everybody has a long reign. There's been plenty of people who've only had 1 month reigns. But for Nakamura, someone who hasn't held the title for a long time, you'd expect when he does win, he will have a pretty substantial reign.
Maybe he would beat Okada. Okada beat him at the Sabre
Dome.
Maybe
he beat him in Tokyo. But that would just be like the same thing that happened 2 years ago when Okada challenged Tanahashi for the title and then lost it. If it's just a bit flat.
If it's the right thing.
I guess so. But the problem is, for my personal opinion, again, I'm probably biased towards Okada, I don't think it is the right opinion. I think Okada needs to win the title back at January at the Tokyo Dome. But whilst I would love to see Nakamura go up against him with a title online, I don't know whether that's the best thing for Nakamura. So I don't know whether the best thing is for Styles to actually retain the title and keep it till then, and then he beats AJ Styles and gets his belt back.
I love Kemenito from Wrestling Forum. Star of the G1 by design was Okada, but AJ was really impressive and I thought got himself over big time. Really, all the participants looked really good and had a chance to shine. Match of the tournament for me was on day 4, AJ Styles versus Tetsuya Naito. Just excellent. No backstory or interference needed. Naito, who won last year's G1, has been kind of had a very unsung good tournament himself.
Absolutely. Naito won the tournament 1 year too early.
I think
from a performance level. From a performance level, because
one or two.
Right, in 2013, when he won the G1 Climax, just beforehand he'd been injured with a bad knee injury, which took him out for quite a few months.
About a year.
Yeah, and when he come back, they kind of really hot-shotted him to the main event quite quickly, which at the time, even I believed, was the right choice, because right before he was injured, he was going to be he was going to be the next thing.
I knew it wasn't the right choice. I said at the time it wasn't, and I think I was proven right in the end.
I think he was at the time, but I think that was probably due to, I think there was a confidence issue. Because Naito's performances, and I'm sure he'd admit this himself, wasn't the best to his ability. I think he still had a lot of ring rust, and that ring rust lasted a long time, folks.
He had a very good... The thing is, Naito had a good G1 last year. I mean, the match with Tanahashi, Tanahashi was excellent.
Yeah, he did have a good one, but there were every now and again, there were like little mistakes that he made, and little kind of things where like the performance... Because I'm a fan of Naito. His performance post knee injury wasn't as crisp as it was right before.
No,
it's taken him time. Yeah, it's taken him time to get back. But the confidence was back with this G1. And again, he was in a weaker block. He was in block B, but he had some great matches. I mean, as you said, like they mentioned the Styles match and Okada matches as well. He had a pretty solid match with Suzuki as well and Goto. I'll pretty much say he's in the same boat as Suzuki. Right now,
he's almost forgot
how good he was, and this tournament reminded you, shit, Naito's actually really consistently good.
Yeah, he had a very good tournament. The thing with Naito is, he is an excellent wrestler.
Absolutely.
I will not deny that he's an excellent wrestler.
Absolutely.
I don't think he's top guy material. And that was the thing last year, where there is just something about, whether it's his look in the sense that he looks a little boyish, and in Japan that can be a negative if he's not a big guy.
Yeah, but they love Ibushi and he looks like a tranny.
But he's not a main event guy either. Point is, with Naito, I do think that was a detriment, because clearly they didn't take to him as a main event guy. They didn't want him at the top.
We're going to disagree on this one. I think it's because of the immediate rush push he got right after the knee injury. Probably the fans felt like he needed to be rebuilt a little bit, like he kind of needed to earn it again. And just winning a G1, maybe in their eyes, wasn't enough. I think also putting it where him and Okada were up against Tanahashi and Nakamura, who was going to be the main event, was a bad decision by them. They should have just stuck with Naito Okada, because that was the right decision, because they ended up having a better match than Tanahashi Nakamura, in my opinion.
Yeah, but at the same point, that match was not near the attraction as Tanahashi and Nakamura was.
Right before the knee injury, he was on the cusp. The crowd loved him. It was something when he came back. And I think it was that they didn't think he deserved to be pushed that much that soon, and that he needed to grow back into the role. So now like, he actually does have the John Cena effect, where now he does get booed sometimes.
Yeah.
And the only thing is, I don't know, wondering why, if maybe Naito's saving grace might be to turn.
I disagree with that.
Because
talked about a lot on different forums, and I see New Japan talk.
Yeah.
But the thing is, his style is completely babyface.
It is, but at the same time, there's been moments when he's been getting booed, when he starts acting like a heel, and he did it during the, I think it was a Honma match.
When he's waving the fans around.
Like, the crowd are booing him, and he's going, like, he's putting his hand to his ear, and he's going, what were you saying? Oh, you're booing me, are you? Oh, you're booing me. Little moments like that where I'm just thinking, you know what?
Give that sad Basset Hound smile, like, he didn't really know what to do about it. And then as the tournament's worn on, and as the months have worn on, he's kind of taken to it a little bit
more. Yeah, he's just kind of accepting, he's going, okay, I might work with this a little bit. And it's just those little moments that I'm seeing now, thinking, you know what, if they want to do that, he can do it. I think he can do it, and he can excel at it. I still think, in terms of being a top guy, it would be as a babyface, but I think the option's there for him.
Just to go on to I Love Kimonito's point for the future direction, I'm thinking the Bullet Club will be kept strong until Wrestle Kingdom. At Wrestle Kingdom, they will lose all their matches, all their belts, and we get hints of dismemberment.
Yeah.
No way AJ drops the belt before the rematch with Okada. It would be less prestigious for him to take it off someone else. It has to be Okada taking the belt back from Styles.
Yeah.
Arking 85 from WrestleForum says, Jeff Jarrett and the Bullet Club, kill me now. This is the big angle, I suppose, at the Cebu Dome. What are your thoughts on Jeff Jarrett and New Japan? This is kind of a strange combination.
I wasn't expecting it, because apparently he appeared on the intermission part, which I didn't see. I didn't see the intermission part. So when he walked out, when he ran out with Scott D'Amore, who kind of trotted out, it was a surprise. I wasn't expecting it. In terms of, I didn't know they were there. And the only thing I will put as a pro for Jarrett being in the Bullet Club is, if this means the Bullet Club, some of the members end up moving to GFW, then it might mean that some of the New Japan guys won't permanently move, but they'll make appearances on GFW.
Oh, I think that's going to be the case.
Which is what I believe the agreement is between the two companies. So we're going to hopefully start getting Okada and Nakamura and Tanahashi and so on performing in America. Now, for people like you and me, Liam,
who we
want to see these guys, it's a lot cheaper to see them in America than it is to travel all the way to Japan.
I know, but
so
at the same
time,
this
is the only pro I can think of, is that we might get to see these guys.
But my God, am I dreading how they're going to be used.
Well, I guess so, because it is Jarrett, but I'm assuming that the reason why Scott D'Amore's with him is because Scott D'Amore's going to be part of the backstage work, and most likely Booker. And as we stated in the TNA podcast 2 weeks ago, Scott D'Amore did actually have a pretty good period of time when
he
was a booker. So if Scott D'Amore's in charge, I'm not going to be that worried.
All right. Lariato mentions, this tournament was great. Inevitably, we got one of the big names winning it, but many others look very strong, including Ishii, Styles, and Shibata. Even though Okada won, Shibata putting down Tanahashi and Nakamura is a big deal, and I think he ties with Styles for star of the tournament. AJ proved why he's called phenomenal, having amazing matches with all different types of styles of wrestlers. I would pick AJ. His match of the tournament with Styles and Suzuki, and in terms of future direction, he said, the thing about New Japan is Tanahashi is a face, but everyone else in the top tier are more heel-aligned. Okada, Nakamura, and Styles all give off the heel vibe. I know the crowds cheer for them, but the language barrier still gives me that heel vibe from everyone else. However, Japanese wrestling doesn't have to follow the Western formula of babyface versus heel, but a dome show probably needs it. This is a hard one to pick, because Jado and Gedo just gave away what I thought were the two biggest matches for Wrestle Kingdom, with Okada versus Nakamura and Tanahashi versus Styles at the Cebu Dome. Japan very rarely do three or four ways either, if never for main events. However, they do like booking the same match over and over, so those two feuds could continue all the way to the Tokyo Dome.
Yeah, I think that's what they're planning.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about the babyface heel thing. I think that's just kind of the product of Japanese wrestling. It's not as big of a deal over there.
But the kind of interesting thing with that feedback is the kind of theme that's coming here now. Like, a lot of people have mentioned Okada or and Styles matches as being the best, but everyone so far, it almost seems universal they're picking Styles.
Styles is going to get the
most.
As
the key guy, yeah. And it goes right back to what we said at the start of this podcast, where we said, like, there's always an access guy for these people, and it seems it's AJ Styles now.
Drug.
This is the gateway. So if you're a fan of AJ Styles, watch New Japan, watch his matches with these guys, and then that'll you know, through osmosis, you'll start watching their matches as well.
You can become fans of the guys.
I think only you and me are the only ones so far that think Honma's the best.
I'm still a little bit not sure about whether I'll say Honma's number one, but I'll make a decision later on. Nasty Yaffa, I thought the star of G1 was AJ Styles.
Hey.
Here are my top five matches for the G1. Number one, Nakamura versus Okada. Number two, Styles versus Suzuki. Number three, Styles versus Tanahashi. Number four, Nakamura versus Ishii. Number five, Styles versus Naito. For AJ, 3 out of the top 5 is not bad.
He's absolutely right. As I stated earlier, whatever you say is absolutely right.
Dr. Doom, from Wrestling Forum. Who do I think was the star of the G1? AJ Styles or Shinsuke Nakamura? Nakamura had an excellent tournament as well. I thought the match with Ishii, the final with Okada.
Yeah, he did. In comparison to some of the other names who had like real kind of high profile matches and were really, you know, hotly talked about, you know, like AJ Styles and Honma and Okada and so on, Nakamura was slowly plugging away during this tournament, having good matches all the way through and just building his story up of like as you know, the guy who might win this.
We
haven't talked about Nakamura yet. I mean, like, obviously you're an absolute huge fan of him. I'm a big fan of him as well, but he's you know, there's other people on that list higher for me, but I do love Nakamura, and absolutely he was the right guy for Okada to face and to beat in the tournament final. They're the right two guys for me. The only thing that I'll say with Nakamura, and this is, I've just got no relation necessarily to what his future push will be or what his storyline is. This is just going to be like the one criticism I have of Nakamura.
Okay.
So this will be interesting to look at your face as I'm doing this. I'll look you in the eyes. My criticism with Nakamura, and I've probably actually told this to you before, actually, so it shouldn't be that much of a surprise, is sometimes he's a little bit sloppy in the ring. And what I mean by this is that every other thing that Nakamura does is fantastic. His characterization of who he is phenomenal. It's amazing. His psychology in his matches is almost second to none. He's absolutely amazing. But because of how he performs and this eccentric personality, some of his moves, every now and again, look a little sloppy. And I'll actually reference one match in particular. Was when he wrestled Honma. And it was one move in particular. Honma's on like the ring apron, like his head's hanging over the ring apron, and Nakamura gets onto the, you know, the side of the ring, and
he
does a double knee drop on the back of Honma's head, and he barely grazes him. He barely touches him. And I remember just watching this, and I've been thinking about this for Nakamura for a while. And I just watched this, and I just thought, man, oh man, he barely hit him with that. Like that was blatantly he didn't hit him. Like the side of his knee grazed the scalp of Honma's head, and just in that moment it took me out of the match. I suddenly started thinking about, like, God, why did he do that move? Why did he hit it like that? If you're not going to hit the move properly, don't do it. That's always the key thing that we've always said, like when we said it before, when we've had conversations, it's like, if you can't do a move, then don't do it. And that just infuriated me about Nakamura. I just thought, like, I know you can hit that move, but you were going so into the performance and the energy's going through you.
Well, it's a move that you got to be careful, and he dropped to the back of the head as well.
Oh, yeah. I can absolutely appreciate the fact he was being careful, but, like, make some contact, for Christ's sake. It was just like he completely missed it, and he did it again later on. I can't remember who it was with, but he did it again. And it's just, this is just me nitpicking at a particular moment, just to give you a reference point. But every now and again, he does it with his bomb knee, you know, running knee that he does sometimes, where he doesn't like fully connect with it. Sometimes that move looks devastating, and then sometimes it looks pretty soft. It's my only criticism of Nakamura, is that he needs to tighten up the offense a little bit.
That's fair enough. I'm not even going to really argue that as a
yeah.
Point. I mean, I think it's completely. I think it's a fair point. Yeah. It's so infrequent that it doesn't really offend me at all.
I'm really nitpicking here. This is me being a perfectionist, because I know Nakamura is great and I know how great he can be. It's just every now and again when he does that, don't do that. Just concentrate a little bit more.
Okay, I see your Nakamura criticism. Go on. I'll raise you with an Okada one.
Yes, I probably know which one this one is.
Go ahead. What's it going to be?
Is it going to be his expressions?
No. I think that the style of Japanese wrestling is that they'll kind of, you know, it's really more about the second half of the match than the first. Okada, more than anybody else, I think, especially at the top mix, is on cruise control for the first half of the match, and you can see it in his face. You can see it in the way he acts. You can see the way he's kind of moving very, very slowly. Expression is part of that, but it's more just the general. The final with Nakamura was quite standout in that regard. And the second half of the match was absolutely out of this world, and I loved it. First half of the match, I was just watching Okada, and he looked like he was just going through the motions. I think he does that a lot.
Yeah, he does. I mean,
nitpicky. I know.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you graciously accepted my criticism, Nakamura. So I graciously accept yours, and I do understand that. I remember when I first watched him, and whilst I do love Okada and I love everything he does, I do remember there was that one nitpicky thing, just like with Nakamura, where I was just watching him going like, man, he looks like he's thinking what his shopping list is in his head. He's sitting there going, right, I need toilet paper, I need rubber gloves, I need fabric softener. You know, he's like just going in his head as he's doing these moves. Yeah. And I'm just thinking, like, just show a little bit more expression.
Live
in the moment. Because when he's getting worked on, his expressions are fine. He's showing pain, and he's really good at showing pain.
In the second half of the match, when it was time to kick it up,
When he's getting his ass kicked, his expressions are great. It's when he's actually doing the offense where he looks like he doesn't give a shit.
Yeah.
And at first, I thought that was his character. Like, he was just like, he was so fucking good. He's bored. He's just like, yeah, I'm beating this guy. This is so fucking easy. I thought that was his character, but I was watching it more because, in particular, my favourite match of last year in New Japan completely was Okada Tanahashi at Invasion Attack. And the reason why was because of the psychology of that match and what Okada's work at selling in that match was phenomenal. That's when I realised, he wasn't like playing that type of character. No, he just wasn't selling his offense. He wasn't selling his own offense. And so, I'll absolutely concede. He is guilty of that sometimes, particularly in the first half of the match where he just looks like he's bored.
Yeah.
But then, like, well, you always remember the finishes more than the start, I guess, you know.
Absolutely.
So, but by the end of the match, he's God.
Trust me, I'm more so of the belief than almost anybody. It's all about the finish anyway.
I absolutely concede your point, though. Yeah, it's a fair point.
Again, we're really nitpicking these guys because these are two of the best wrestlers in the entire world.
The two best wrestlers in the world, quite possibly.
Yeah. White Essence from WrestleForum has a long list of matches that were his favourites.
Yeah.
And didn't really necessarily name a single wrestler as the star of the G1 because there's so many people in
there. Yeah, it's so hard. As I said, everybody's right. Whoever they pick.
Yeah. But again, so I won't get into all of his details. I will just this one thing that he mentioned here, and he said that it's things like the G1 that make me adore and appreciate pro wrestling so much, which I really love. Actually, it's a really, really nice bit of feedback there.
Yeah.
Dr. Doom from WrestleForum as well. We mentioned earlier on his star of the G1 was AJ or Nakamura. His favorite match of the G1 was the final with Okada and Shinsuke Nakamura. Yeah. And in terms of future direction, what do you think New Japan's direction will be? I see Okada fighting Styles again in October, but not going over. So you think he's actually going to lose the title shot early.
Okay.
I think Styles versus Nakamura will then main event Wrestle Kingdom. I can see the Bullet Club taking down other members of Chaos until then. He's the only one of the big three that hasn't faced Styles yet, Nakamura is referring to. He's also, in my opinion, the best of the big three, so we'll see how that goes. Fair point. We'll transition this now into G. John Chase's top 10. I'll give my top 5 afterwards, but since we're probably going to have a lot of commonality, I'll let you read your top 10 matches of the G1 Climax. For those of you who are looking to kind of just dive in here with New Japan, what do you think? Your top 10 matches of the tournament.
Okay, at number 10, these are for people who have seen it. You can obviously judge for yourself whether I'm right, and for people who haven't seen it, this is your guideline.
These are the ones to seek out.
This is your index, okay, to put into Google or Daily Motions or whatever. At number 10, Shibata Ishii from day 10. At number 9, quite a few people have said this one already, Naito Styles.
Yeah, it's a great match.
At number 8, Okada versus Naito. At number 7, Nakamura versus Honma, also from day 5. So this is two matches back to back from day 5, right? Number 6 is Honma versus Ishii from day 4. Okay, going into the top 5 now, and this is when we start seeing a bit of a sequence of a bit of consistency in who's at the top here. At number 5, Okada versus Suzuki. Okay, now the fact that this is number 5, because I watched this match after I saw the finals, because I actually unfortunately didn't get to see that main event of day 11, which is what this match is from. Even though I was watching this out of sequence, I could see where the dread was coming in for Okada, where it looked like, okay, Okada was in the main event of the show, Nakamura was already through, Styles is on 16 points, and Okada needs to win. Yeah. And then Suzuki, this prick, this bellend, this beautiful bastard, right, is casting him the match. Like, he's beating him, and he's laughing in his face, he's sticking his tongue out, and he's beating the shit out of Okada. And just that great finish where, you know, Suzuki does two slaps on Okada, punches him in the face.
The punch I love.
Punches him in the face, right, full contact. And then he thinks he's got him. And again, I was showing this to my colleague as well, showing him, like, watch this Rainmaker, it's sick.
Yeah.
And he goes... Suzuki runs at Okada. Okada hits a beautiful dropkick as always, then levels him with a pile driver rainmaker, right? Yeah. Where he just lands on his head, and I don't know how Suzuki's still walking.
Game over.
He has to be crippled. A great way to end day 11.
It really was. I did see this match in sequence, and I will say that even though I was more shit my pants to see if Nakamura went through, and he did, and I was extremely happy about that.
Yeah.
I even though I was watching it on my own, I screamed aloud at the Rainmaker just because it's fucking horrific.
Oh, my. I've watched that. Like, you'll see quite a bit of a recurrence here. I kept watching that finish over and over again today. I was just watching it over and over again going, that is sick. That really is. Just like, he tried to kill Suzuki. Right? It's just like, that's where the intensity came in. Number four, Styles versus Suzuki from day 7.
Wow, number four.
Yeah, number four. Again, it's a personal pick. If you think this is the best match, you're 100% right. But I just disagree with you on this point, because I thought there was three that I enjoyed more than this. I mean, what can we say about this match that we haven't already said? I mean, like, this was the first time in the tournament that we fully took notice of Suzuki again, thinking, oh my god, this guy's freaking great.
Yeah.
And it was just another show-stopping performance from Styles. There was even like a great moment where they actually kind of did Taka Michinoku, who is at ringside with Suzuki, starts attacking AJ Styles, and then for Bullet Club, I think Takahashi comes out.
Yeah, Takahashi
counteracts
comes in.
Taka, and then that brings out the Killer Elite squad of Archer and Smith for Suzuki Gun, and then Gallows and Anderson for the Bullet Club. So in the end, you just have like six guys from three from both teams just fighting at ringside. And for that one moment, even though this was very kind of very American-esque, the crowd loved it. The crowd absolutely loved it, the Suzuki Gun going up against the Bullet Club. They freaking loved it. For a brief moment, Suzuki is the babyface.
Oh, it's totally the babyface.
Yeah, he was totally babyface. And like, the crowd were eating it up, and like, the way like Suzuki almost got Styles, but he just got him, like, I think he had him in like an armbar, and like Styles still hit like the Styles Clash. If you think this is the best match of the tournament, you know, I'm not going to argue much with you there. Number three, Okada Styles from day one.
Okay.
Again, just because this was really like a showcase match, and I think actually for a while, until we got to Styles Naito, Styles Okada was one of the best. It was the best match of the tournament so far. It was for quite a while. It was the best match. When on the outside, Okada whips Styles into the barricade.
Yeah.
Right.
AJ, this is traditional leap over.
Yeah, does usual leap over. Poses, turns around, expecting to do his own leap back over to hit Okada, but Okada's already one step ahead of him. Okada has already ran at him and does a crossbody dive across the barrier and hits AJ in the crowd.
Yeah, spot so awesome that AJ and Tanahashi did it at the Seibu Dome.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Did it again, which was good, but not quite as effective
as the first time.
The crowd loved it. And then there's the other spot where they're going back and forth with their drop kicks, where like Styles is trying to hit it and Okada's trying to hit his and so on, and it's just like they both got fantastic drop kicks. Number two, which has been actually mentioned, probably the most consistent of all the matches, Okada versus Nakamura from day 12,
yeah.
Like the finals of the tournament. Some great like reversals of Tombstone and so on, and you know, it's just the finish when just like he's had enough of Nakamura, and he's gonna fucking kill him now. He's gonna kill him with three Rainmakers, which you don't need to do. I think he can kill a rhino with one. You know,
last one would fucking kill a wildebeest.
Stank.
Yeah, it was a stank
on it.
It was brutal.
It was brutal. Again, everyone. Thought, I don't need to say much about that match. Everyone has said that it's their favorite.
Yeah,
so
it's the back and forth with Nakamura working on, you know. Yeah. Getting that armbar and desperately trying to get... One spot in the match that I love is when he's got the armbar on, Okada's trying to make the ropes,
yeah.
And Nakamura uses his foot to push off the rope to take him back into the middle of the ring with the armbar, which is great.
Because my number one choice, I don't think has been mentioned yet, hasn't been mentioned on the forums, we've mentioned it already. So most of you, you could probably take the Okada Nakamura as being your number one if you want, but I'm going to throw this one out there for you.
It's as my same first, as mine.
Yeah. My favourite match... It's from day 8.
Yeah.
And it's Shibata versus Honma. Yeah. This, for me, was stunning.
This was this
year's version of Ishii Shibata last year. But it was even better. Because now you got Honma. We already talked about Honma and like the comedy that was in his gimmick. And the fact that he can go, you know, he can go stiff with his moves. And now he's facing someone who doesn't play around. Right? He's going to fucking kill you. And these two... It just goes back and forth constantly. From the very beginning, Honma gets in the ring, he's right in Shibata's face, staring him down.
Yeah.
And from that moment on, those two are literally going back and forth, back and forth. No one's in control. And there's this one moment which I pick out, and I absolutely fucking love this. Shibata goes for the PK, the penalty kick, his finisher, right, on Honma. Honma catches the leg, raises up, and Shibata proceeds to slap him in the face.
Oh, this is great.
Both hands slapping him simultaneously, just going back and forth. And these are stiff slaps to the face, right? And then he keeps slapping him, and Honma just slaps him once.
Yeah.
And Shibata's floored.
Drops like a sack of shit.
And the camera looks on Shibata's face, and it's fucking money.
Yeah, it's great.
Shibata's face is both a look of shock that he's been put on his ass, and the fact that even after such a beating, Honma's still giving it to him, and just general confusion because he's fucking dazed. Like, Honma's just knocked him on his ass. He's dazed, he's shocked, he's confused, he's pissed off of himself, he's pissed off of Honma. It's all in his face, all in one look, and he's glassy-eyed, and it's fucking amazing.
It's a brilliant match. That there are so many great little things like that. That exchange is brilliant.
It's amazing.
But yeah, Honma desperately trying to hit that headbutt and failing, and then eventually hitting the first like diving battering ram headbutt of the tournament, which was brilliant.
Yes, and the crowd went crazy for it because they're like, "Whoa, he's got a new version of the headbutt, and it worked!"
And of course, the momentum, it's there. He goes for the big one off the top rope, and Shibata puts both feet up and kicks him in the face.
Oh my god! Yes,
the headbutt from the top rope, which is just incredible.
Oh my god! For every time you see that spot, which in all American wrestling, someone goes for the top rope and the person on the floor lifts their foot up, and you know the person off the top rope does that thing where he hasn't done the dive; he just basically just drops to his feet and takes a foot.
Not this one.
He proceeds to do the headbutt as normal and just gets freaking skewered by Shibata's feet. He just does the headbutt as normal and just gets freaking maimed. And it's absolutely brilliant. And even further little details like that, where tiny little detail, when Shibata lifts him up for the go to sleep, Honma's like elbowing him and kneeing him, trying to get out of the move. In the position that Shibata's in, Shibata just flicks an arm up and slaps him in the face.
Yeah.
Just like,
fuck that.
And you little pussy-ass little elbows. Just slaps him in the face, hits the go to sleep, then the penalty kick and wins. And it's just like, Shibata's a fucking badass. And Honma is a tough bastard as well, because he took a bloody beating in that
match. He took so many beatings on this tournament.
He was a proper star.
That fucking spinning back slap. That Honma took in that match was incredible.
God, we haven't even mentioned that with Shibata. Yeah, he's just brought this into his arsenal. That was just a spinning back fist, and he does that on Honma and freaking drops him. And it looks freaking devastating.
Oh, it's horrible looking. Just to very quickly, in terms of that top 10, that's a pretty solid top 10. I will say, I've got my own top 5 here. Number 5, Okada versus AJ Styles from day 1.
Yep.
Number 4 is Nagata versus Ishii from day 11, which
very
is a match,
match
I actually loved. Number 3 is Styles and Suzuki for me, and number 2 Nakamura and Okada in the final, and number 1 is Shibata versus Honma.
So we agree on number 1 and 2.
Number 1 and 2, we're both in agreement there. I just absolutely love that, and to the point where I actually kind of want to watch that Shibata Honma match right now.
We will. Fuck me, if that guy doesn't get pushed now, what the hell are they doing over there? Because he's fantastic. He's now risen to number 2 on my list of favourites, right after Okada, after this tournament. That's how effective his performance was, and he didn't win a single match. He finished on 0 points. Not many people have finished on 0. He's one of a select few.
Yeah.
And he is so over with me. I love this fucking guy now. I really do. He makes me laugh. I like cheer for him. He looks like a badass, and it's just like
his facial expressions are so good too. He looks so sad every time he misses that headbutt, and he looks so happy every time he hits it.
Every time he misses it, he's just holding his head and he looks so confused as to why it didn't work.
Why didn't it work this time?
It always works in practice.
In terms of final predictions, final thoughts, I will say that I do think that AJ is going to keep the belt all the way through to Wrestle Kingdom. I don't think that they put it on him just to have a short run. It makes a lot more sense, I think, for Okada to take it from a heel.
I think so.
It's this Bullet Club thing. I hate the Bullet Club, but they've clearly gone all in on it, and I don't think they would do that unless they're going to ride it all the way to Wrestle Kingdom. Tanahashi Shibata, I really like for Wrestle Kingdom as a match. I think that would be damn good.
Well, they teased it earlier in the year and they just didn't do anything with it. But I'd rather like to see Nakamura Okada, and I'd like to see Ishii beat Farley and kick the shit out of that fat fuck.
Ishii would be a good Intercontinental Champion. Yeah. I can see them maybe going with Tanahashi.
Yeah, I could probably see. But I'd rather see Tanahashi and Naito go up against Styles and Jarrett.
Yeah.
But like you said, I do see the more intelligent answer would be it's Styles Okada, maybe Tanahashi Jarrett in a special match.
Which unfortunately leaves Nakamura kind of high and dry.
Well, Nakamura would get his IC title back from Fale.
That's such a lateral move.
It is, but it's the same with Okada. It's like Okada gets revenge, gets his title back.
Yeah, but that's the world title.
Nakamura gets... I know. Everyone wants to see Nakamura Okada.
For the last 2 years, it's been his time to be more than just the Intercontinental Champion.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's very obvious from the fan reaction, from his charisma, from the match quality. I want to thank everybody for listening this far. I want to thank everybody for the feedback. This has actually been a hell of a lot of fun, and hopefully this sways a few of you to check out some of the matches that we've mentioned.
Please do.
Yeah, it's good stuff, and if it will restore your faith in professional wrestling. Trust us.
Yeah.
For G. John Chase, any final words?
Rainmaker!
This is Liam O'Rourke. Thank you very much. We are out of here.